Carlisle to Connellsville, Bedford to Bethlehem, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, a deal has been struck to restart the idled Three Mile Island nuclear power plant near Harrisburg. This time, the project will be financed with private dollars and without government subsidies. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation for a Capitol Watch discussion. And Democrats are joyful that what was shaping up as an electoral rout of Joe Biden is now a competitive election with Kamala Harris. But joy is neither a strategy nor a tactic, as I explain on this week's Town Hall Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania Supreme Court justices from both parties have raised concerns about the voter registration practices of the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, which automatically registers voters when they obtain a driver license. Pennsylvania Auditor General Tim DeFore has undertaken an audit of the process to ensure its integrity. However, the Secretary of Transportation, Michael Carroll, has criticized DeFore's efforts. Given lingering voter concerns over the integrity of the 2020 presidential election, Carroll's opposition to an independent audit seems to be at odds with efforts to prevent a recurrence of such questions this November. Speaking of the upcoming election, Luzerne County in northeastern Pennsylvania is the latest county in Pennsylvania to flip from blue to red in voter registration. Republicans now outnumber Democrats in that county, following a similar turn of events in Bucks County outside of Philadelphia. Republicans are continuing to register more new voters and obtain more party switches than Democrats, and have cut the Democrats' statewide voter registration lead in half since the 2020 election. The annual Pennsylvania March for Life took place this past week and drew what is being described as the largest rally ever to occur at the state capitol. Despite a steady rain, thousands descended on Harrisburg to support the sanctity of life and to oppose any loosening of abortion restrictions in the Commonwealth. Abortion law in Pennsylvania has not changed since the administration of Governor Robert P. Casey Sr. Casey Sr. was a strong advocate for protecting the unborn. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The Three Mile Island nuclear power plant near Harrisburg has been shuttered for several years, but a new deal to sell power generated at the facility to Microsoft appears likely to breathe new life into the facility. This time, no government funding will be involved. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation for a Capitol Watch look at the deal. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, great to be with you.
Great to be with you, David. Thank you.
Well, you know, and the listeners, you guys, we're grateful for you tuning in, yet again. A lot of times, Steve and Rebecca and I are grumbling about stuff. This week, believe it or not, we have actual good news that we are looking at a legitimate private sector market-driven business investment for Pennsylvania that will take an asset that was deactivated and bring it back online. And we are talking about Pennsylvania's most famous or infamous nuclear reactor, Three Mile Island.
And with this, David, we've seen on some of the past episodes of this show in particular, even, we've talked about the way the government tends to want to interfere with the free market and sort of create special incentives and subsidies and so forth to try to get business done. And we've seen how that doesn't work.
Correct.
It's not organic.
It's not organic. And because it's not organic, it's not lasting.
Exactly. So it's a temporary fix with a Band-Aid on a problem that needs much more than a Band-Aid. What's the real fix? The real fix is allowing the free market to work. the price system of economics. We've all heard how the demand for electricity has been rising while the supply has been falling, and therefore the price of electricity has risen and people are struggling and suffering. Well, that price is sending a signal to the marketplace. We need more electricity. And it's a signal that's not, again, it's not an order from the government. It's not a bribe from the government. It's the market saying, hey, you get into this market and supply more electricity while prices are high, you can profit from it and actually make people better off, and their prices of electricity can start to go down instead of up. And that's what we see happening now in Pennsylvania. It almost feels rather miraculous.
It does.
But it's what the free market does every day.
And if only we would allow it to. And, you know, there are a number of dimensions of this deal which are really exciting. So we're talking here about the Microsoft Corporation and that they need a steady flow of baseload electricity to power a data center that is going to be working with artificial intelligence. So obviously this new computational process is the cutting edge of future developments, and what those centers need. If you're going to process data at that volume, at that speed, you need a lot of power. And so this is why Constellation Energy has made a deal with Microsoft that will have Constellation refitting Three Mile Island Reactor 1 and bringing it online so that Reactor 1 will be generating that baseload power for Microsoft's AI data center. And so it's like everybody wins. Conditions have changed. We have an open and competitive market. And so now this business opportunity is the thing that is going to resurrect Three Mile Island.
And we actually saw for once the Pennsylvania government do the right thing about 5 years ago when they were under immense pressure to create subsidies specifically for the Three Mile Island plant. There were threats. It's going to close if we don't get this subsidy from the government. Commonwealth Foundation, along with many other organizations, fought the pressure to subsidize Three Mile Island.
No nuke bailout.
And ultimately, they chose voluntarily to close down, but the asset was still sitting there.
Right.
It needs to be some refurbishing, but it's still sitting there, and it's available now, and the market has changed, and the market is doing something completely above and beyond what the subsidies ever would have done.
Correct.
This is drastically more funding. This is drastically more economic impact, all for the good here in central Pennsylvania and across the state. And it's part of, like you said, part of the baseload, which if people don't know what that means, that is the electricity that is always available when needed. Middle of the night, dark of a cloudy day, whatever it is that prevents solar and wind from functioning properly, those are not baseload. They can't always be there. Baseload is part of the true backbone of the grid, the
Correct.
Part that keeps hospitals lit up when there's a storm outside, the part that allows for schools to be open and electricity to be flowing to the consumers who need it most.
Nobody is saying that if you want to put solar panels on your house, that you should be allowed to do that. Like, if you want to do that, that's great. Do that. But to distort the marketplace by massively subsidizing these particular sources, which are, you know, let's be honest, they're low yield, they're intermittent, and they're also really expensive. And of course, there are other issues about the industrial inputs for those sources, things that the U.S. doesn't control, which also makes that problematic. But if those, I don't know what to call them, boutique energy sources were subjected to market discipline, they would change. And I'm not saying even necessarily that they'd be wiped out, but that undergoing the rigors of market competition is how something gets better. If there was a way to figure out how to make these things more efficient, higher yield, you know, better for consumers, because consumers would have a choice of what they wanted rather than being bribed into it with a big subsidy or being forced into it by having the government mandate those things for the utilities. You know, it's a paradox that the breakthrough technologies are actually being delayed because the government is protecting them from competition. I mean, it's strange to think of it that way, but I do believe that's true.
And competition is the key word. The market is designed to function in a competitive environment. if that competition is removed or artificially restrained, then the market no longer is going to produce the most efficient result. The most efficient result is more people get more benefit.
Yes.
When you start to tamper with that, it always ends up, and history has proven this over and over again, when governments tamper with that market system, you'll get certain people who are benefited extraordinarily at the cost of others who are getting kind of cheated out of their share of that profit. The market itself responds to need and provides for that need because it's responding to the price system telling it, hey, you can make a profit by coming over here and doing this. It sounds almost selfish or self-serving, but it is the way the market functions, and it's that opportunity to make a profit that drives it. And that's what gives good to not only the companies involved, but the whole community from an investment like this that totally changes the picture, and it's done voluntarily because of the market, not in spite of the market.
Exactly, exactly. Amen. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor, with Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. And, you know, Steve, one of the factors that's involved with successful market function is risk, and that the investors, the entrepreneurs, in every circumstance, they're taking a risk, a calculated risk, but that they are, you know, making that decision about, okay, if I extend this, if I put out this investment here, putting this money at risk, I believe that I can earn a return that's worth me taking that risk. And so that's, you know, we talk about price signals. That's a big part of it. And so this is why investors need to have certainty so that they can take a calculated risk. Not that they'll always win the bets that they take, but if they don't know or have no certainty over what the rules are going to be, then they just stand pat because nobody's going to go and put, you know, their money or money they're responsible for at risk if they aren't sure, you know, what the marketplace conditions are going to be. And so government can't experience risk. The government has the power to tax, to compel you to hand over your money to the state. You have no choice. If you fight, they'll put you in jail. And then the government can go and can spend, you know, an absolute mountain of money on something that it thinks should work. And then if it doesn't, and you waste millions or tens of millions or hundreds of millions or billions of dollars, the government goes, that didn't work. And there are no consequences.
Let's try it again. The answer. We'll try it again.
Yeah. And this is how you get a Solyndra or other, you know, other expensive fiascos like that. And ultimately, you know, it's waste. It's just pure waste and hubris and, you know, and government greed, because government wants to have control. Government wants to take the credit for, you know, for whatever successes would result from their schemes. And that actually it's wiser and better oftentimes to just leave people alone. You know, the great economist and author and philosopher Thomas Sowell, it's like, well, you know, people say government should do something. It's like, have you ever compared what happens when government doesn't do something with when it does? And of course, pointing to the Great Depression and that government interference in the marketplace, Herbert Hoover and Franklin Roosevelt extended that recession for a decade, when actually in Britain, they took the hit. They didn't do anything to interfere in the economy. And 18 months later, they were back on track. So it's like there's an opportunity cost that results from government screwing up those market signals. And again, government can't experience risk. So that means that government itself is deaf and dumb to the inputs and the signals that would be necessary for success.
And part of the problem is, I don't think in most cases students are even being prepared to understand economics and how an economic system works and how it actually responds to the marketplace. It responds to the need being expressed by consumers in the most efficient and most successful way possible. So part of the problem here that we face in the United States is this idea that, oh, you can't have expansion unless the government gets involved with some sort of a subsidy or underwriting. But we're seeing the very opposite.
Mm-hmm.
We've now seen this deal between Constellation Energy and Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
No one could have forced them to the table. They chose because they were going to mutually benefit from this.
Yes.
And the consumers are going to benefit from this because they are responding to the price signal that's being sent. We've seen the same thing. We talked on this very show several weeks ago about the U.S. Steel merger with Nippon Steel.
Yes.
Same thing. The government's not forcing that. That's something that's being driven by a need in the marketplace,
mm-hmm.
and a win-win scenario for those companies if they're able to complete that transaction. That's the kind of thing that is totally on a level beyond what the state subsidies might be involved, or the little government agencies that
yes.
do things to try to spark competition. They can't hold a candle to the force of the free market and the decisiveness of risk-taking enterprises in the marketplace.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And there's a cautionary tale. There's an industrial site out in, I believe it's Westmoreland County, and that many years ago that the Commonwealth, I think it was under Governor Thornburg, had an arrangement with Volkswagen, and that Volkswagen came in, they ran a factory there that the Commonwealth had, subsidies and things to prop up that operation. And as soon as the subsidies ended, company left. And then some years later, there was another deal with the Sony Corporation, I believe, to manufacture TV sets. And it was the same sort of arrangement where, okay, we've got this investment and we'll help you with taxpayer money. And yeah, they stayed as long as the subsidy was in place. And then when it was over, they left. And so this kind of taxpayer-funded, government-directed economic development, that to the extent that it works at all, it just creates jobs that we rent as opposed to jobs that we own, which is what happens when you have organic economic growth that's the result of voluntary choices where both parties that are engaged believe that they are getting a good deal and that that's why they choose to proceed together. Like the market imposes the most daunting challenge, the toughest question of all, is this worth me spending my own money on it? You know? And like if you can get somebody to say, yes, this is worth me spending my own money on it, bam, that's how you have organic economic growth.
And there's that that vigilance that has to take place on the side of entities. They have to watch for opportunities.
Sure.
That's part of being competitive.
Sure.
And it's fascinating to see what happens when they see that opportunity and they make a decisive move like this Microsoft move to work with Constellation to supply 20 years worth of energy, baseload energy, right here in South Central Pennsylvania.
And there's no way to know how this AI computational function is going to manifest, how it could increase productivity. It could increase the quality of goods and services in ways that we haven't even imagined yet. So it's exciting for a number of reasons. It's exciting that there's a positive development that's happening in terms of investment and jobs and economic growth and the birth of a new technology. But it's even more exciting that it was done in an economically healthy way, and that it was, again, that this is organic economic growth that is going to be permanent. You know, these are going to be jobs that we own, not just jobs that we rent.
We talk a lot about the brain drain in Pennsylvania, our best and brightest citizens getting their college degrees or their technical degrees or their job experience and moving to other states where
right.
the markets are more welcoming and
right.
there are better jobs that pay more. This opportunity we now see for the Three Mile Island plant is an opportunity to have brain gain
mm-hmm.
in Pennsylvania. We don't
mm-hmm.
see so much of that anymore, but this shows that it can still happen, and it's not happening because the government said, you do this and you do this and we'll give you a little bit of money to make it smoother. It's two companies in the marketplace meeting for mutual benefit to create a massive enterprise that's going to help Pennsylvania, whether it's families, whether it's entities, investors, or folks looking for a job.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a very hopeful sign. And I got to tell you, Steve, I need it because there have been several instances over the course just of this last, I don't know, last 12 months where there have been potential investors who, sizing up the situation, just decided that they weren't going to go forward in PA. And that happens too. And those things are never, you know, revealed to the public because the companies don't want, you know, bad publicity. They don't want to leave bad feelings behind in case they need to come back. But it really, we make it harder than we should. So, you know, as the listeners have heard me say, I'm sure many times, it's like there's good news and bad news. Like the bad news is that we do all this dumb stuff to ourselves in Harrisburg to make it harder to get economic growth. But the good news is that because we do it to ourselves, that means that we could choose to stop, that we have it within our power to turn things around. And again, learning the lesson of this deal with Microsoft and Constellation is an important step forward to say, look, here's an example of what can happen when you just have a healthy marketplace, you have the, you know, the right kind of parameters around it with the rule of law, enforcing contracts, and just let it happen. And it does.
And it does.
And it will. So anyway, we're glad that we had something happier to talk about today. You didn't get your usual snoot full of doom and gloom. Tune in next week. We might have more. You never know. But until then, Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and what you're doing?
They can visit CommonwealthFoundation.org on the internet, and there's a specific document that they might want to look for there, A New Vision for Energy, Pennsylvania Leading the Way for American Energy Security and Prosperity. That's right on our website.
Outstanding. Check it out, CommonwealthFoundation.org. As always, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org. And from Steve and me, thank you for listening. We will catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. The left, typically beset by anger and hostility over everything from supporting terrorists in the Mideast to a perceived right to kill babies in the womb, is joyful these days. The near-comatose Joe Biden has been replaced by energetic Kamala Harris, turning what was shaping up as an electoral rout into a competitive presidential race. Despair turned to joy. Joy, however, is neither a strategy nor a tactic. It is an emotion. And while emotions do indeed play a large role in political campaigns, the emotion must be felt by a wide swath of the electorate, not just the activist base. To be sure, Democrats are more adept at using emotion than Republicans, who tend more to focus on policy. But joy without policy is like a house built without a foundation. At some point, it will collapse. Barack Obama successfully used emotion, conveying his message as hope and change. Donald Trump followed up with his iconic Make America Great Again slogan. Perhaps the most successful use of emotion in relatively recent presidential history was that deployed by four-term President Franklin Roosevelt, whose campaign theme song, Happy Days Are Here Again, became a Democrat Party staple for decades. Unlike Kamala Harris's vaguely defined opportunity society, Franklin Roosevelt's happy talk had a foundation. Roosevelt took office amid the Great Depression and began building what is today the deep state by dramatically expanding federal programs to pull the nation out of the economic slump. Today, there is vigorous debate over whether those programs helped to end or extended the Great Depression. Eventually, though, the economy improved, the nation felt better, and Roosevelt got the credit. The problem for Harris and her joyful minions is that she is part of the administration that caused the rampant inflation, high interest rates, and housing crisis of the past 3.5 years. To continue the analogy, she is more Herbert Hoover, Roosevelt's predecessor who is blamed for the Great Depression, than Roosevelt himself. The few solutions she has proposed are time-tested failures. Price controls in particular have been spectacular disasters every time and everywhere they have been tried. It sounds good to promise aspiring homebuyers $25,000, but that will cost billions of dollars, most likely financed by expanding the money supply, printing money, which will trigger another round of inflation. In an effort to combat the over 20% inflation that has occurred during the Biden-Harris years, the Federal Reserve has raised target interest rates. While not historically high, the current rates are higher than they have been in decades, casting the intended cooling effect on the economy and contributing to voter concerns over their personal financial well-being. Suspiciously, the Federal Reserve, just weeks before the presidential election, has now implemented the first interest rate cut since 2020. Government statistics show the inflation rate has dropped significantly, although the higher prices of the past few years remain in place. But inflation and GDP numbers are subject to revision during the ensuing months, so we don't know if they are in fact accurate. The unreliability of government data was laid bare several weeks ago when the rosy jobs growth numbers of the late spring and early summer were revised downward by over 800,000 jobs, an astoundingly high revision even by government data standards. In an effort to not be burdened by what has been, the left and its allies in the legacy news media will tout, quote, an improving economy. The interest rate cut will make for some joyful news reporting, but the reality is it takes months for such actions to perk through the economy and have an impact that people will actually see in their daily lives. Food prices have risen 25.8% since 2020. A basket of groceries that cost $100 in November 2020 today will cost you $125.80. The cost to heat your home has also risen dramatically. Natural gas prices have risen 27% since the winter of 2019-2020. Electricity costs have also surged over 18%. Periodic spikes in gasoline have contributed to the strain on family budgets. The bottom line is few voters sit around after dinner reading government statistical reports, but they know it costs them much more to put that dinner on the table. That is why virtually every poll taken over the past year has found inflation, the economy, to be a top voter concern. All the happy talk in the world cannot change what voters actually feel. The candidate who most effectively addresses those concerns will likely end up the winner of what is shaping up to be one of the most closely contested presidential elections in U.S. history. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 29 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WTYM-AM in Katanning, WCNS-AM in Latrobe, along with WBXQ-FM in Altoona, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal, plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.